Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Jordan Miller. He is the founder of Satori. It's a pioneering crypto AI endeavor designed as a future oracle to help humanity anticipate upcoming challenges. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You are welcome to the show, Jordan. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people will benefit from what we are going to discuss right now. We'll be talking about crypto, artificial intelligence, and along with that, our collective future as humanity. But first, to understand about your Satori network itself, you know, here there is this word called crypto. And when we talk of crypto, we also talk about all the bad noises that has happened, not very much in the recent past, and people get. So is that crypto and your crypto AI endeavor different? Help us understand in that backdrop.
Sure. So crypto, blockchain, it's just a technology that allows you to make distributed networks, really is how we're using it. So that means, you know, Satori is all about decentralizing AI and democratizing it and making it so that anybody can add to its production, can benefit from its use. We really want to make decentralized AI because it's very powerful, and it's kind of centralizing in some small companies that own all that power. So we wanted to make a solution for anybody to be able to download an AI that can help do something together with all the other AIs that are on this network. And so we use crypto, blockchain, in order to make this distributed network that anybody could participate in.
Right, Jordan. Help us understand, what does this decentralization, who are your competitors then? Do you mean the big companies who are the starters of this artificial intelligence? Think there is a big war going on. Everyone is getting big on AI, and a lot of acquisitions are also happening in this line. So I want to understand a bit for the simple audience, simple person sitting down, perhaps in a rural area, either in India or in the US, or even in Europe.
Sure. So there are a lot of centralized AI companies out there, but there are also some blockchain AI projects out there. One good one is TensorFlow. That one's pretty useful. It can do some pretty cool stuff. So I suppose if you had to find a competitor, that would probably be the closest competitor. Was that your question?
Yeah. Your competitor. I just want to understand vis-a-vis who you are, you know, who would be your competitor in terms of, you know, when you are making, when you say decentralized, then decentralized from what in that aspect, you know,
right.
Because for me, I understand decentralization in a very, very layman's term.
Right. Yes. So, like, we don't want one company to be in charge of having the best AI out there. So all the companies are competing. We want to be able to make a network that anybody can participate in and decentralize it. And that also means that they can benefit from it. So when they're putting their computing effort to work, they can earn a token made for this AI that can control the AI, that they can use to vote on how the AI should work. So, that's what we're doing.
Right. Now, let's understand about this, the future of humanity part. So, you know, that part we need to understand, because if AI could predict about itself, about humanity, then it could also predict about itself. So I want to understand, it could have predicted about crypto also, that listen, people will misuse it in the way these scandals are, you know, suddenly coming up so enormously, and now people are weaving different stories around all these cryptocurrencies and all, and at a time when somebody called Sam Bankman, if I understand, some punishment has been announced against him by the law. So help us understand how do we look at these predictions about humanity? How should we understand this development?
You know, the funny thing about crypto is you can hold your own keys and you can be in control of your own crypto. And so people that gave their crypto to corrupt banks or kind of risked it in smart contracts that weren't fully tested, these kind of things happen. But it's always you taking that risk. Whereas the ethos of crypto is you don't have to take any risk if you don't want to. You can keep your own keys and keep it safe. That's kind of the point of it from my perspective. And so I've avoided any of these issues because I've learned my lesson not to trust other people with your crypto. And Satori is focused on future prediction AI. So it is made to predict the future of basically anything we want to predict. And that could be crypto related stuff, but it could also be government statistics or economic prices or economic statistics or even climate statistics. If we want to know what's happening on our planet, what's happening in the world, it can watch those data streams as well and predict those as well.
Right, Jordan. Help us understand, again, from a layman's perspective, if I understand artificial intelligence in whatever form it is available, either in terms of, you know, ChatGPT, then in terms of Bard, now it's different name, Gemini, if I understand, then there you've got Claude, Perplexity, Bing, so many of them. So we know, okay, you put in something, it will answer you in one way or the other. Whether you are happy with it or not. How is your Satori different than that? Is it the same method one can use it and you will get, what is it that you have put inside it? What sort of intelligence you have got? Where has it learned it things from? Is it different than the present day artificial intelligence tools that we are using?
Okay, so kind of a big picture. AI has been evolving over the past, a long, long time, but over the past decade or so, it's taking some pretty big leaps. And this is because they started out with statistical modeling, and then they eventually got into these deep neural nets, and that led them to do some pretty cool stuff with images. And now it's evolved into language. These deep neural nets, they've learned how to handle language with it. And so we now have computers that talk, like you've talked about Bard and all these other competitors. So Satori is going to eventually have an LLM. That's the technology behind the language AIs. It's going to have its own, and you're going to be able to go to Satori and talk to it. It's not to that development yet. That's kind of the very top layer of the technology stack of Satori. What we're building right now is the bottom layer, which is this network of future predicting nodes. And that kind of data, all that future prediction stuff, that has to go into the LLM at the end so that we can then talk to this AI about what the future holds. But first, we have to build kind of the bottom of the iceberg, the big part that's kind of all hidden. And that's the network of AI predicting nodes. Once we have that up and running and scaled and it's going very well, we can then layer on this LLM on the top that you can actually just go to the website and have a conversation about the future, because it's ingesting all these future predictions into the language model, and then you can talk to it about what the future holds.
Right. And won't the present tools available, won't they be as competent as Satori? How would be the results different if I were to put that same question, say, on any of this ChatGPT or Bing or whatever, you know, is available, Gemini, Claude, and all those things?
Good question. So what would happen is you would get an answer, which would be a guess. It would be just something that sounds good, because that's what these language models can do when it comes to the future. They really don't know, right? They would just be guessing. It would be somewhat equivalent to you going up and asking your friend what he thinks the future would be. It's just kind of a guess. But if you power it with all these future predictions underneath, which is the whole network, then it can correlate things and it can see patterns and it can make a better future prediction and give you a more distinct answer and say, well, this is what's going to happen according to your question. And this is why, because these patterns are at play. This is currently playing out. It's going to evolve in this manner. And that's so once we get to the LLM stage, which is probably after launch, we're still in beta right now. But once we get to that stage, it will be able to ingest all this, make coherent sense about what's happening right now and how that will play out in the future.
Right. Right, Jordan. So let me understand it this way. At present, people are very worried about artificial intelligence and jobs. Yesterday itself, you know, I read about, even in Britain, UK, a lot of jobs are on the verge of getting lost. As many as, you know, said 8 million or something. Correct me if I'm wrong, or in case I have not read it, this is for my disclaimer here. But that is very much there, that figure is there. And it's the same everywhere. People used to earlier talk a bit, you know, in a low voice about the loss of jobs, but now more and more reports are coming what artificial intelligence is doing in terms of. And so people have to learn to live with whatever artificial is going to do or not do.
Right.
But I want to understand, can Sartori predict that this is the time when humans will become jobless, that artificial intelligence will take away all these jobs in this time, and this is the cutoff date, till this date, by this date, this will happen? Can it do that? I don't know if present artificial intelligence tools can do that. I've never put that query into them.
At present, it can't predict that because it's not consuming enough data. It hasn't scaled enough. But I can give you my perspective, and I think it's probably true that lots of jobs will be lost, or a lot will also evolve to be different. But I'm seeing things right now that tell me that programming jobs, for instance, will be very well automated pretty soon, within a few years. They're going to have bots that are pretty good. And that doesn't mean all the programmers go away immediately, but it means you have to learn how to use these tools as fast as they come out if you want to stay relevant. And that's another reason that I think we need to build decentralized AI, so that anybody, you know, these companies that build these kind of AI programming bots, they're going to make a lot of money. But that's also going to open the door for anybody who doesn't know how to program to talk to an AI and say, I want you to build me this program. And instead of paying thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to a human programmer, they'll be able to create things without very much cost at all. So it's a double-edged sword. It does mean that we become very efficient to be able to do anything we want to do. But it also means that those jobs go away in the short run. So, yes, it's going to be a time of chaos, I think, in some ways. But hopefully, with all that increased efficiency, the prices of goods fall. That's kind of one saving grace that could occur, is that since we're so efficient and we can make things that we need much cheaper, the prices fall very quickly as well. Hopefully that plays out that way.
You believe that? We thought industrial revolution will come in and a lot of things will get, you know, cheaper, you can produce at a faster rate. But prices are not determined by just technology. Prices are also determined by human mind in terms of demand and supply, in terms of, you know, where you want to position those goods. You see, even in terms of housing, the general housing prices may fall or go up, but the luxury housing is the way they have projected it. It's always there at its own price. So I guess we have to really debate about that, whether it is going to benefit in that sense, Jordan. But you are right. I do understand your point of view also. So help us understand the use cases for Sartori. What can be? And you talk about, you know, that it can predict the future of everything we humans find valuable to foresee. What is it that we, you think humans will find valuable? And what is it that, you know, Sartori can answer? What are the use cases? Can it answer when humanity will end? Is it because of climate change? Or is it because of some stupid person pressing the nuclear button?
Oh, well, that's actually one of the reasons that I've built this. One of the core reasons is that I felt like, okay, so we've been evolving through time when we've been on this planet for a long time. And the reason that we are the most successful species is because we can adapt to our environment. So, and we use our intelligence to do that. Well, we're very adaptable. Well, we first had to adapt to the physical environment, you know, the plains or the forest or whatever. And then we had to adapt to the social environment as we got more cohesive and tribal. And we've done okay at that. I mean, even though we have this global civilization now, we've moved into nation states. And so we can still organize when we have millions of people in one tribe. And so we've adapted to that. But this new change is technological. And so can we adapt to ever-increasing technological change exponentially fast? That's kind of a good question. I don't know. But I think if we're going to have a chance at doing that, then we're probably going to need something that can see into the future for us and warn us of potential problems so that we can kind of react to it before it happens and put things in order before they exist and, you know, try to fix problems before they actually come to full fruition. So I'm hoping that, you know, if Sartori is able to mature and become really powerful, that it will serve as a future oracle, like you mentioned earlier. A future oracle that can tell us the future, warn us of problems that are coming down the pipe, and so that we can take action collectively and know what we need to do instead of bickering up to the very last second because we don't have a future oracle at this moment.
Right, right, Jordan. So be that as it may be, whatever intelligence, you know, comes in, artificial intelligence, AGI, super intelligence, or whatever we name it, in the future. What about human intelligence? You have studied intelligence, human intelligence, how our intelligence works. How do you think, as an intelligent human being first, that our intelligence will find our relevance or relevance for humanity amidst such people or some people who would be perhaps, you know, looking at their own version of the future of humanity, but our human intelligence. So will it be stronger than all other forms of threats that might come in terms of intelligence, or our intelligence will be capable to deal with whatever comes in the future? As an intelligent person, human being, tell me, what do you think?
I think the question is a little nuanced. So like you said, I studied intelligence, I studied the brain. And one of the main things I discovered was, or learned about, was that the brain uses future prediction all the time, everywhere, all at once, even subconsciously. And it does that. That is what makes it that is what gives it its efficiency and makes it really powerful and able to be intelligent, is that it's always predicting the future all the time. So that is the bottom layer of intelligence, as far as I'm concerned. And so instantiating that bottom layer on a global network, I think is the first way that we can start to build an intelligence structure that we can all take part in. So to answer your question about maybe some competition between intelligence structures, machines, or humans, I think in the long run, the competition we will merge with the machine. Because as soon as we got phones and as soon as we got computers, we started using them to connect to each other and to connect deeper into technology. And I don't think that trend is going away. Now, I don't think we'll see the fruition of that trend in our lifetimes. But if we take a very zoomed out view and we kind of look at it from a bird's eye point of view, I think we can see that eventually we're going to try to connect into the computer with computer brain interfaces as fast as possible. We're trying to increase the bandwidth because right now we have very little bandwidth. If we want to talk to a computer, we have to type or we have to talk maybe now that they can speak language. But thinking, getting connected to the computer just by thought is, I think, where it's going to go. And that's going to allow us to connect to each other and to the machine. And so I don't see, I do see in the meanwhile, it's going to be a bumpy road, maybe. It's possible. But I think in the long run, we're just going to see the machine as an extension of our brain capacity. And we're just going to use it that way.
Right, Jordan. Technologies like Neuralink, they are just the beginning of perhaps this sort of a thing that you're talking about. And you are talking about something much, much more advanced than this.
Yes.
Do you think this is what we wanted when we started from being a cave people? Or is it going back to the caves is a perhaps not in that real cave way, but in the sense that going back to being humans and being on the ground with use of technology, the technology revolves around us, that we don't revolve around technology. Will that have a future? What do you think Sartori will answer on this?
I think we'll probably always have people that don't want to interface with the machine. And I think that's totally fine. I think we shouldn't force anybody to do anything. I'm a big freedom guy. I don't think we need to do that. So we still have Aboriginal tribes around the world, not very many, but we should respect them and not bother them. And we have people that want to live in modern day society, but don't want to use a lot of technology. We should respect that. I think it's going to continue forever. If people don't want to interface in the far, far future, this deeply and intimately with the machine, we shouldn't make them. And I don't think, I think a more intelligent global mind wouldn't make them. So I think that's how it's going to play out.
Right. And one last question I wanted to understand from you, Jordan. You are very young, so you will be one who will be taking up the humanity part a bit forward. People like me we will see whatever we can. But to a person who is going into the future with all this information and knowledge, I'm asking this. In terms of, spirituality, a lot of people I talk to, and I'm amazed by that, happy with that, a lot of people are talking about spirituality in today's time. Not just Indians. Indians, it's a part of our being, our culture. But when people from the Western world, when they come and talk about spirituality, about rebirth, reincarnation, about the universe, connecting with the universe, connecting with themselves, and it's not about technology, it is about feelings, it is about thoughts. How do you see that part evolving? That is that the good part of humanity that will fight against people who will be trying to force their version of, the future of humanity onto the real humanity itself? How do you see spirituality's role in the coming days or coming times?
That's a good question. I mean, back in the day when we had really staunch, really powerful religious structures, People became atheists and nihilists, and the West at least went through some kind of period of rebellion and saying, well, God is dead and there's nothing but bumping particles. And it does feel like we're starting to come out of that kind of thought process. I myself had kind of a microcosm of this experience because I was raised very religiously in a Mormon religion. And in my early 20s, I kind of rebelled against that and realized that's not for me. And I became atheist for, I don't know, probably like 6 months. And I came right out of it. I went and looked at Eastern religions or philosophies, I should say, and got really involved in metaphysics, trying to understand this. And I've come to a place personally where I recognize a duality of kind of the ineffable and the world of language and of form. And so I don't view the body as anything other than extremely, extremely advanced technology. It's biotechnology that, you know, the earth has developed, but it's unbelievably advanced. And so that's how I view it. And that leaves me no choice but to view my own personal subjective experience as kind of the undescribable void looking out of that avatar, I suppose. And so I kind of just expect, personally speaking, that the earth or the civilizations, the Western culture, will continue to go in the direction that I've gone. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what I see in the future.
Absolutely. We will have to understand perhaps future in our own ways. And a lot of people would want to understand more about all these things from you, Jordan. So, you know, about you, about your company, maybe perhaps engage with you professionally. So what is the best way for them to do so?
SatoriNet.io is the website. You can go there. There's some links, social links under the join tab for Discord and Twitter. That's where we put out like content and like what we're doing. You can keep up on it. That's probably the best place. You can download it now. It's in beta and eventually it'll go into launch and you'll have it downloaded already, so that'd be nice. But yeah, that's probably the best place, satorinet.io.
Wonderful. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.